Hi everyone, welcome to my video in Volume 8, Issue 2 of Mass, and this is titled REST Redistribution Sets and Cluster Sets. What are these, quote, alternative set structures, and how can you implement them? Over the past decade, I'd say that cluster sets, followed by REST redistribution after that, have really picked up a lot of steam. Now, whenever something like this comes up, I think it's important to kind of discuss it from a conceptual perspective. Because I think sometimes we hear these terms, REST redistribution or cluster sets, and similarly with things like REST pause and drop sets, and sometimes there tends to be the perception that there's some sort of magic involved with them. And that, oh, if I do this, here's what's going to happen to my gains. Or, you know, I read this protocol and REST redistribution was programmed exactly this way, so that's how I have to do it. But really, they're just concepts. And what's paramount is to understand what these concepts are trying to accomplish. And once we understand what they're trying to accomplish, then we can understand how we could potentially alter the prescription a little bit and when they can be particularly useful for us. So oftentimes, REST redistribution and cluster sets are lumped together in the literature. They're not the exact same thing, so we'll also distinguish between what those are. But as we go over the objectives in a moment, you'll see we're going to define these and go through them and ultimately talk about if and when they are useful for us as Mass readers. So today's objectives, define what REST redistribution sets are, and then determine the difference between REST redistribution sets and cluster sets. Discuss the purported utility of REST redistribution sets and cluster sets. So number four is when we're going to get in and examine the data. But even before we do that in number three, what are these things purported to do, these programming strategies? Why are we talking about them? Oftentimes what happens is before the research gets into something, in the practical realm, people start doing things and they start adapting cluster sets and they start using REST redistribution, and then research goes and tests that out. And I think that's a very cool thing because this is a good example of where practice has informed researchers and researchers have taken heed from what's going on in practice. So then ultimately, when we get into the data, examine how these alternative set structures compare to traditional training. And we're going to look at three things with that specifically. One is the acute effects of how these alternative set structures affect set-to-set fatigue, meaning if you're doing five sets on squats with 100 kilograms for eight reps, how does that affect the change in velocity from set to set if you're using cluster or REST redistribution versus traditional sets? And if there is an acute difference in, let's say, the maintenance of velocity from set to set, which, not to spoil it, is really the theory behind this, does that play a role then in long-term strength and hypertrophy? And there's three meta-analyses within the past 3 years that we can look at to answer this question. And then discuss the practical application of implementing these alternative set structures. So let's start with the definitions and the basics and the purported reasons why we would use them. So there's two previous articles in Mass on REST redistribution. I've talked about cluster sets in those here. Both were out in Volume 7. I've hyperlinked them here. I would take a look if you have no background whatsoever in these concepts. Take a look. These articles are pretty practical as well. You'll be able to read them and then jump back into this video for a more comprehensive overview. So what are REST redistribution sets? Well, put simply, they are taking traditional training or traditional sets and reducing the rest intervals and the reps per set, but increasing the number of sets to equate for volume. So in short, the best way to do this is to look at it as an example. If we have traditional set of three sets of six at 80% of 1 RM with 60 seconds rest, REST redistribution is just as the name sounds, redistributing the rest. So instead of three sets, we're doing nine sets, but only two reps each set with the same load. And then we're taking shorter rest between each set. And by taking shorter rest between each set, the point is to be able to equate for the total training time. It's a similar total training time, but you're taking shorter rest in between each set, so you should be fresher. So these two reps here, by going every 45 seconds, or even if you're going shorter than that, every 20 seconds or every 30 seconds, at 80% of 1 RM, shouldn't be too difficult. So you should be able to maintain velocity and repetitions in reserve better from set to set with this prescription than you would with this prescription. So that's the theory behind that. That's what it's purported to do, which we'll get back to in just a moment. And so, as we said, the primary purpose here is to maintain that performance from set to set. Now, if someone is interested in maximizing strength and power adaptations, it might make sense to utilize this. We do know that there is more of a dose-dependent relationship between proximity to failure with hypertrophy than there is with strength, meaning that with strength, it's probably a good idea to stay shy of failure. And so if you can keep the barbell moving quickly, and you're not fatiguing too much from set to set, but you're still keeping that peak load high and doing sufficient volume, that should theoretically be good for strength, or better maybe even than going to failure all of the time. So rest redistribution could be good for strength and power training, especially since it is purported to maintain velocity from set to set. So does that acute maintenance of velocity translate into better long-term gains, right? That's kind of the theory here. And just to understand that something like this is just conceptual, and it doesn't mean that rest redistribution is taking 3 sets of 6 and turning them into 9 sets of 2. Here is another example that's been used in the literature before. You could take 3 sets of 12 at 75% or 1RM with 2 minutes rest between sets, and change it to 9 sets of 4 at 75% or 1RM with 30 seconds rest between sets. Somebody doing 12 reps at 75% or 1RM, that might be pretty close to failure. There's a large inter-individual range in the number of reps somebody can perform at a given percentage of 1RM. But on average, this person might be about at failure here, 12 reps at 75% of 1RM. Well, if they do 4 reps, and let's say they could do 12, well, now they're at an 8 RIR. That's pretty far from failure. Even someone who isn't that good at reps and might only get 9 or 10 at 75% of 1RM, they're going to have a 5 or 6 RIR. Even only taking 30 seconds rest, they're going to be able to probably perform all these nine sets, still have a couple reps in the tank on each one, maintain velocity better here from set to set, maintain repetitions and reserve better here than they would here. And so that's the overarching theory of rest redistribution sets. But it's important that when you're redistributing the rest, you're redistributing such that the total training time is similar, right? You're not elongating that time. So if we read at the top here in red, with cluster sets, additional rest, meaning a traditional rest period, is added at the end of all clusters. Thus, clusters take more time. And that's the main difference here between cluster sets and rest redistribution. So the first two here in this flowchart we've already seen. Traditional sets, 3 sets of 6, that's 18 total reps. 9 by 2, that's 18 total reps at 80% of 1RM with the manipulated rest interval. But cluster sets, we see here, 3 sets of 6, that is 18 total reps. But what the cluster sets are, where they differ, I should say, is that after each rep, let's say there's 20 seconds rest. So in the first set of 6, do a rep, rest 20 seconds, do a rep, rest 20 seconds, should maintain velocity better within that set, then take 60 seconds rest after those six reps. Now training time is going to be longer because not only are you resting in between each rep, it's not saying, hey, we're doing 18 reps consecutive, rep, 20 seconds rest, rep, 20 seconds rest. It's doing a rep, 20 seconds rest, doing a rep till you get to the end point of the set, which is 6 in this case, then taking the full minute rest that the traditional set group did over here, and now then you're doing the next 6 reps. And so this is elongating the training time. So both of these are referred to as alternative set structures and are quite similar. They're quite similar in that the goal of them both is the same, to maintain velocity, to maintain repetitions in reserve, to maintain power output, should theoretically be better for acute strength performance or acute power performance from set to set, and then should theoretically be better for longer term performance because you are staying shy of failure, the barbell is moving more quickly, and so forth. Now, whether that pans out, we'll look at in a moment. But the difference here is this takes longer, but the concept is quite similar between these, especially when you compare them to traditional sets. And so the purpose of cluster sets, as we just said, is similar to rest redistribution, to maintain that performance. So together, these are called alternative set structures, right? And it's said to be manipulating set structure in some way. Somebody might refer to them as something else, and there could be a lot of other things that we could call alternative set structures. Some people call advanced training techniques and so forth. I don't really get too caught up in that terminology as long as you know what we're talking about, then I think that's the purpose of conveying the information. But together, oftentimes in the literature, if you do read the published literature, you'll see rest redistribution and cluster sets referred to as alternative set structures. And so again, not exactly the same, but in the meta-analyses and systematic reviews that we're now going to take a look at, these are often lumped together. So there's been three, as I said at the outset of this video, within the past few years, two from Jukic in 2020 and 2021, and then one from Davies in 2021. The first one we're going to look at looks at the acute effects, meaning what are the effects of these alternative set structures on maintaining velocity and power from set to set? Does the purported mechanism actually pan out? And then the last two, the one from Jukic and the one from Davies, are going to look at the long-term outcomes in strength, hypertrophy, muscular endurance, and even vertical jump. So the acute effects here, right? This one from Jukic, acute effects of cluster and rest redistribution set structures on mechanical, metabolic, and perceptual fatigue during and after resistance training, a systematic review and meta-analysis. So again, keying in here on the word acute, the intra-session fatigue, 32 studies included. Here are all of the outcome variables that are of interest to us here. We can see all these effect sizes are above 0.2, which is typically considered small. Some of them are large, some of them are moderate, meaning they're above 0.5. And we can see the training type favored was alternative set structures for all of these, meaning from set to set, and then to the totality of the session, where was the velocity higher? Was it higher in the cluster or rest redistribution sets, or was it higher in the traditional sets? Same thing with peak power, and then the reduction of lactate. So when we are having lactate accumulate, that typically happens when we are doing lots of rest or taking shorter rest intervals. Now with cluster and rest redistribution sets, you're doing lots of sets and taking relatively short rest intervals, but it's not very fatiguing exercise because we can see from the velocity being maintained. So lactate typically accumulates in a more of a fatigued state from that metabolic stress. And so in this case, the lactate reduction was better with the alternative set structures, meaning lactate buildup was lower, and thus time to fatigue should be elongated because you're not creating that metabolic byproduct. Same thing here, power and velocity were maintained better. So all of these favored alternative set structures. So the bottom line here, if we answer the question of do rest redistribution and alternative set structures, cluster sets, maintain performance better from set to set on average than traditional sets, the answer is yes, right? Unequivocally, I feel pretty comfortable saying that for the most part. But that is just the acute effect. That doesn't mean this always is going to lead to greater gains over the long term. And in fact, if we go to this next meta-analysis from Jukic, we can see that for strength and hypertrophy, the effect sizes are absolutely negligible. There's no meaningful difference in long-term strength and hypertrophy with rest redistribution or cluster sets versus traditional sets. Muscular endurance did tend to favor traditional sets, which makes sense because more reps are being performed per set. It's going to be difficult to improve muscular endurance to a very meaningful degree if you're doing a rep, taking a bunch of rest, and then doing another rep. Whereas if you're doing a lot more reps all at one time, that's training more specifically to muscular endurance. And then vertical jump didn't quite reach a 0.2 effect size, but it was close and it favored alternative set structures. So it is possible that power outcomes could be a little bit better over the long term with alternative set structures, which of strength and hypertrophy and power, I would expect power to maybe benefit the most from alternative set structures. And that did seem to pan out here. But strength and hypertrophy, there did not seem to be a difference. Now we're going to go on to the Davies meta-analysis in just a moment. But one thing I do want to stop and just kind of as a reminder is anytime we see something newer in the literature and we say there's no difference, we tend to kind of think, oh, see, it doesn't work. No, it works. It's just not better, but it's also not worse, right? So if somebody is looking to gain strength or even muscle and they want to utilize rest redistribution or cluster sets, they should go ahead and do so. And we're going to talk about when we might do so at the end of this video a little bit, the practical implications. But this is not worse by any means. All right, it's just saying there isn't a difference. So it's not something we should throw away. It's just not something that we should say, oh, this is magic, everybody should do this. Rather, by being no significant difference or no meaningful difference, it presents itself kind of as a tool in the toolbox and say, hey, it's there for us when there's practical situations such as, let's say on a highly skilled movement like a squat, for example, somebody has some technique issues and they don't want their technique to break down too much and they want to stay farther from failure. They may then go ahead and use rest redistribution because it's going to allow them to really hone in on their technique on each rep or two, only doing two reps maybe per set, rather than doing 6, 7, 8 reps per set. So there are situations where we might use it as well. So just because there isn't a difference, just want to be cautious and say, it doesn't mean we shouldn't utilize it. It's just saying it's not the, kind of the magic key here. It's not going to be way better than traditional training. So if we go to the Davies meta-analysis over the long term, we can see here that strength and hypertrophy, again, no meaningful difference. In this case, power, also no meaningful difference, even though things tended to lean in favor of vertical jump being better with alternative set structures in the Jukic meta-analysis. And muscular endurance was also no meaningful difference, even though it was meaningfully different here in the Jukic meta-analysis. But if the measures of interest are mainly strength and hypertrophy for many of us here, we do have support from both of these metas with similar effect sizes that alternative set structures were not better for long-term strength and hypertrophy. So discussion of these meta-analysis, acute kinematics are maintained better with alternative set structures, meaning velocity and power, which also means that repetitions in reserve should be more stable. So if somebody does a set to failure or near failure, 1 or 2 RIR, they're going to fatigue a little bit for the next set. And then perhaps instead of being at 1 or 2 RIR, they'll be at 0 or 1 RIR. And then on the following set, they'll either fail or they won't be able to perform the number of reps they wish to, or to continue performing the number of reps, they might have to change the load a little bit. And so from set to set, velocity, power, RIR should remain relatively similar, or at least not as steep of a decline with alternative set structures as with traditional training. Long-term adaptations seem to be unaffected, especially for hypertrophy and strength. The one thing, though, on that is proximity to failure is considerably different between alternative set structures and traditional set structures. So it is interesting, even though in a recent meta-analysis, there did tend to be a dose response between training to failure and muscle growth. If we look at the literature here on alternative set structures, oftentimes somebody who's doing, let's say, you know, 2 reps on a cluster sets with an 8 RM, they're training at a 5-6 RIR a lot of the time, since they're not fatiguing that much and they're not sacrificing any muscle growth. Now, that is on the main lifts. It doesn't mean it would be that way if they did that on biceps curls or triceps extensions. So I don't think that extends to all muscle groups, but it is a little bit of a feather in the cap for non-failure training. Perhaps make some consider, okay, maybe I do think training to failure is a little bit better for muscle growth, but I can probably do it on these exercises. And then on these other main lifts, I may benefit from staying shy of failure or even using some of these alternative set structure strategies. And then maybe do a set to failure at the end on that squat or bench press to maybe maximize it. But in this case, I do think it is interesting to look at that hypertrophy isn't different despite these individuals in these alternative set structure groups training so far from failure. But again, the exercises that are typically used, squat and bench press, need to be taken into account here as opposed to the single joint exercises that people commonly tend to train to failure and are much more feasible to train to failure. And then the decision to use traditional or alternative set structures could come down to preference to some extent. And I think anytime there's no difference or no meaningful difference between these on the group level, it doesn't mean that one might not pan out better for a person in practice. And a lot of that could be preference. Does this person enjoy this or not? And I'll get back to this more, but I've said this in mass before, which is that whenever I got into taking some short rest intervals, I always enjoyed it just because it kept me very focused in that session. If I was doing, you know, rest pause and I picked up some dumbbells that I could do maybe 10 to 15 reps with, and I was doing a total of, you know, 35, 40 reps and would do as many as I can or close to it, take 20 seconds rest and go again, I had no choice but to stay focused. Agonist, antagonist, supersets, had no choice but to stay focused. Doing cluster sets on squats, you know, something like four sets of 12, but each set was two or three reps at a time. I had no choice but to stay focused because I had three reps, 30 seconds, three reps, 30 seconds. And so that was enjoyable for me. It's not something that I would want to do for every single exercise, especially cluster sets. It would take very long. But I did prefer it in some situations, time permitting, because it was enjoyable and kept myself focused. So I would encourage folks, coaches and lifters, to treat things that way when making a decision on what to do when things aren't significantly different in the literature. So additional thoughts here on proximity to failure. So it's not just in terms of the muscle growth, but also in terms of the downstream effects. And I've mentioned downstream effects in mass before too. What do I mean by that? Well, anytime we do something, if we train to failure, for example, that might have downstream effects on fatigue levels. Not just set to set, but global fatigue. How do you feel after training? How much muscle damage do you have? How quickly can you train again? Do you need to take a couple days off that muscle group now because you trained to failure? Whereas if you didn't train to failure, you'd be able to train more frequently and maybe do more volume. It's difficult to say all that, and it's difficult to say if any additional muscle damage or fatigue that comes with failure will continue to persist. You might adapt to that and be fine after a few weeks. But nonetheless, I always think it's important to think of the downstream effects and how that might affect adherence to training. So one of these downstream effects, or some of the most common ones, are effort-based RPE. So not repetitions and reserve RPE, but effort-based RPE. So Cuevas Alberto in 2022 looked at traditional rest redistribution and cluster sets. And you can see these protocols here. And they looked at per set RPE and they looked at session RPE. There wasn't actually a difference in session RPE, although traditional was slightly higher. But there was a significant difference, denoted by the asterisks here, for significantly higher per set RPE, effort-based that is. Individuals felt each set was harder in the traditional set versus the rest redistribution or versus the cluster sets. And I do think that is important here. It would be nice to have data looking at a day or so out. How did individuals feel about it? Also, intention to exercise. So in addition to this per set and session RPE, asking the individuals, how likely are you to perform this same workout again within the next week, within the next month, within the next year, right? That is like an intention to exercise scale. And then we'd get a gauge of if individuals would want to continue doing this, if it's something that they would adhere to. So if there's no difference between these, would they continue to adhere to it? So a little bit higher per set RPE in the proximity to failure group, but not a lot and not maximal. So just because it's higher doesn't mean that it's going to be, this is enough to be a deterrent. And some people might actually enjoy this, but some people may not. It's just worth noting that just because the long-term outcomes are equal, that doesn't mean that everything is equal between these strategies. And we do find something that is a little bit different here. Whether that matters over the long-term is hard to say. It might matter for some. Some might not like putting forth this little bit more effort. Some may actually prefer it. I don't know. And we don't know how this affects fatigue over the course of the week. But again, just because one thing isn't meaningfully different between these types of programming strategies doesn't mean that everything is the same. There are these downstream effects to consider. And proximity to failure, going closer to failure in each set, is probably the reason, in my opinion, that this per set RP is higher in the traditional versus either of these alternative set structures. So in implementing this, just some thoughts here, probably best implemented in team sport athletes, explosive athletes that are really looking to maintain velocity from set to set. The Davies meta-analysis did not show that power was greater over the long term, but things leaned in favor, I say that ever so cautiously, of vertical jump being better with the alternative set structures. In the Jukic meta-analysis, the long-term Jukic meta-analysis, maybe as priming exercise or maybe for post-activation potentiation, right? We've talked about these in mass before. Typically, priming exercise is a explosive type of exercise, could be done with as low as 40%, maybe up to 80% of 1RM. That would improve performance maybe 6 hours to 48 hours later. You might do it, say, hey, I have to max squat and bench tomorrow. I'm going to do something light today. So rest redistribution could be a way to do this, although I would probably not do that because I would want to take a little bit longer rest between each set to not be too fatiguing. Maybe as a form of post-activation potentiation, but again, I'd probably do something like three sets of one at 90% of 1RM with a couple minutes rest between sets. But if you did work up to a couple singles at 85%, took 30 seconds between sets that could be viewed as a form of rest redistribution or cluster sets for post-activation potentiation. I'm just thinking of other ways somebody might implement this, get the benefit of that programming strategy and also get another benefit. Just helping stay engaged, shorter rest can help with this, as I talked about. Maybe not for everybody, but potentially for some. And then, as I mentioned before, if we look here on the slides, no difference does not mean better or worse. It means no significant difference, again, on the group level, right? So it doesn't mean we should throw away these findings. It might actually work better for some or worse for some, right? If you're really, really fatigued one day, in part of, we talked before about using a flexible training strategy or a flexible template. Say, hey, if you're not feeling great here, you have three types of workouts throughout the week, a heavy, a moderate, and a light day, you might flex in that light day. Well, one thing that you might do is say, all right, I had this three sets of six at 80% of 1RM, but I'm not feeling too great. I feel like I also need to stay a little bit focused. I know I can form two reps at 80% of 1RM. I'm gonna do the 9x2 at 80%, condense the rest interval, keep myself focused. I should still be able to perform that no problem. And that's a way to use a flexible template if you understand this concept of rest redistribution. Again, and I'll mention this in the next slide or a couple slides here, is that this is not an all or none principle. Meaning, if you look at the last bullet point on this slide, somebody may prefer rest redistribution or cluster sets on the main exercises than perform traditional sets on something else, or rest pause sets or drop sets on some assistance movements. So I think this is well suited for something like a squat or a bench press or a deadlift, but not so much if you're going to biceps curls or you're going to triceps extension or you're going to rows. You're probably going to go more rest pause, drop sets, traditional sets, agonist, antagonist, supersets, things like that. So I think for highly skilled lifts, this is a technique that somebody might use to make sure they're really honing in on their form, practicing their technique. You know, they're avoiding, if they want to avoid training to failure, it should ensure that they do that. If they're worried about breaking technique, let's say on a squat, getting close to failure, leaning forward too much, something like this could be a good thing to implement. Even if the long-term adaptations aren't going to be magically better, it might allow them to hone in on that technique and then go to some of the more traditional training or even other advanced programming strategies like rest pause later in the session. So it's not an all or none principle. And then when you decide to use it, could be very strategic, like those high skilled lifts. So additional thoughts here as we continue on, again, not the all or none principle, right? And so I've given an example here. If we go down, since we've already stated a lot of this, an option here, alternative set structure on the main lifts for those reasons of technique we mentioned. Multi-joint assistance, you might use traditional sets on something a little more difficult like a dumbbell shoulder press. And then you might go to rest pause or drop sets on biceps curls. So it's just a conceptual example that anytime we talk about something, it's not an all or none principle. And then again, using them when appropriate. So conceptually, just to go back, I always think it's necessary to just really understand what we're trying to accomplish, which is to maintain that velocity and RIR there from set to set. Now, there are large inter-individual variations in the rate of fatigue from set to set. And so, as we're going to mention here on the next slide as well, you may even want to auto-regulate your rest redistribution. So meaning, if you go to 9 sets of 2 at 80% of 1RM, that might be a 6 RIR for some. Meaning, some people might be able to squat or bench press, let's say, 8 reps at 80% of 1RM. But others might only be able to do 5 reps or so. And then by their last set, they're at a 1-2 RIR. So the prescription can be auto-regulated, and I'll show you exactly how on the next slide. But if you have a prescription goal, you can have a starting point for rest redistribution. So let's say we do program 9 sets of 2 at 80% of 1RM with a shortened rest interval. Could also have an RIR target, and it could say that RIR target could be 5. And as soon as somebody hits that RIR target, or is under that RIR target at 4, then we'd stop the set. Let's say they were at a 4 RIR after 1 rep, we'd stop the set. And what we would do is we would change the load for the next set. Because the goal here is to maintain that velocity and maintain that RIR. So if somebody is fatiguing or somebody isn't very good at reps and they take this protocol and they implement it, they might already be too close to failure, or they might be too close to failure by the time they get to set five. Whereas somebody else that can do 12 reps at 80% of 1RM and doesn't fatigue very quickly is gonna have no problem with this. So although this is a good idea, the whole point is to maintain that velocity, power, and repetitions in reserve from set to set. So if somebody is struggling with this prescription, perhaps that means they fatigue more quickly than the average person and they're not that great at doing reps. In that case, it doesn't mean you can't utilize rest redistribution. It just means this protocol probably isn't the way to go for them, right? They might want to utilize 9 sets of 2 at 75% of 1RM, or they might want to use cluster sets where they're doing sets of 1 at 80% of 1RM and resting in between each rep. And so in that case, which alternative set structure you would use might depend upon your fatigability and how good you are at reps. So here's an example I put in a previous issue of Mass for autoregulating rest redistribution, which discusses what we just did on the previous slide. So first, you might change 3 sets of 6 at 80% of 1RM with 3 minutes of intercept rest to 9x2 at 80% with 90 seconds of intercept rest. You start performing sets, even though you have this goal of 2 reps, you stop each set at a 2 to 3 RAR or 2 reps, whichever comes first. So if you stop at 2 reps and you're at a 5 RAR, great. Right? If not, you stop at a 2 to 3 RAR if that's your goal. If after 5 sets, the lifter is performing 2 reps at greater than or equal to 5 RAR, maybe it's too easy, then you can increase the load. If they are performing these sets and it's 1 to 2 RAR, then you would decrease the load. Again, if they just have so much fatigue, instead of doing doubles, maybe do singles and make it cluster sets. And then you get a rest after each rep. And then at the end of that set, you get a full rest. Right? And that way velocity should really maintain. So you can auto-regulate this, you can set an RAR target, you can set a rep target. If your RAR is too low, then you can go ahead and back off the weight even within the rest redistribution. Now, you're not gonna be likely hitting failure, but you probably don't wanna be around, let's say, a 1 RAR. So if you utilize this here, you're 2, maybe 3 RAR, maybe you even wanna keep it to a 4 RAR. You wanna stay farther from failure, maintain velocity. Then in that case, as soon as you dip below that RAR, you can go ahead and adjust the load. So just ways to understand the concept and then put auto-regulation in to make this concept even better. So additional thoughts, right? A lot of what we covered is that just in general, we're not looking at anything that's magical here, right? It's not over the long term, but it is understanding what these are trying to accomplish, right? That maintenance of acute performance. And then if you're a team sport athlete, you want to go ahead and implement it. How you might auto-regulate it to use it to your advantage. Which of these strategies, cluster or rest redistribution, is best for you, right? All of these things are important to consider. And then the one thing I put on this slide that I mentioned previously is, you know, for deadlift singles. And I've talked about this in Matt before, in Mass before. The individual that introduced me to powerlifting about 15 years ago now, was Matt Gary. And so we've had Matt do a guest video interview with us in Mass before. If you're not familiar with Matt, I would look him up. And what a just an amazing person, and in my opinion, one of the best powerlifting coaches of all time. He's been talking for years about performing singles on the deadlift and doing a single and backing away and setting back up rather than doing something like 3 sets of 5. It doesn't mean there isn't a place to do reps on the deadlift. It's just if you're really practicing your technique, you might do a single, set the bar down, back away, walk back up, and then do another single. And you might do, you know, 10 sets of 1 that way. Well, you know, he was talking about cluster sets essentially before, you know, they really became a thing. And, you know, at the time it really resonated with me because it was a way to make sure I didn't break my technique and to make sure I was holding it and practicing it each time. So that is something that you can't really pick up on in the literature. But since there isn't a significant difference over the long term in these adaptations, I think it's worth thinking of these other benefits that you might get from doing it. And so I think of Matt all the time when I think of cluster sets, especially on the deadlift, because I think it's a very valuable strategy to have A tool in the toolbox doesn't mean you're doing it all the time, but something that you can utilize to go ahead and work on that technique, but get all your volume in, work up to enough of an intensity. So that's a case where, again, this is not an all or none principle. You might do that on the deadlift and then use traditional sets or rest pause or drop sets or something else on some of your assistance movements that day, but you're probably not gonna use these rest pause sets on the deadlift because then your technique might become an issue and you might get injured. So just makes me think of that when I think of cluster sets, and that's how I adapted them for a lot of years. So applications and takeaways, I went a little bit different on these times rather than having a bunch of bullet points. I just kind of wanted some, not necessarily quotes, but some just overarching kind of language here hitting on these concepts. So my real takeaway is that there isn't anything magic. Understanding the concept, managing this fatigue from set to set, and utilizing them is not an all or none principle, right? The long-term adaptations aren't different, but that doesn't mean we should throw them away. It means we should understand when these might be appropriate. And if somebody does prefer to use them, they should go ahead and do so. Because when there isn't a difference, that means that, hey, this is if anything, that's a good thing. It's something we can use, and now we have options, and now we have personal preference. Then, of course, keeping in mind all of the downstream effects like session RPE, effort-based RPE. Overall, I do find these strategies cool. I find them something we should implement if we want to. If you know, training's a little bit stale, you need to switch it up a little bit. You need to keep more focused. You find your mind wandering a bit in the gym, or you're taking a bit too long rest. Not that taking 5 minutes rest is bad for performance, but if you only need two or three sometimes on a movement, and you find yourself taking so long, and then you're in the gym forever, try something like this maybe. Might stay a little bit more focused, stay on it, so your mind doesn't wander so much. So I do find these strategies practical and effective, or effective enough, depending on what the individual's goals are, and everything should be goal dependent. But I hope everyone enjoyed this video. I did enjoy making it. I think it's a very, very practical one for us. Thank you for watching. As always, it is an honor and a pleasure to do this each and every month, and I will see you next month.